like 2 in the morning. He was like, okay.
Oh, my God, that was so fun.
It was so fun. Oh, shit. Okay. I'm also in Bleeding Dead. I'm going to try and keep it different than the Parsha Schmoozes because I feel like that's cheating. So we'll talk about something a little bit different. The Torah says in Parshas Behar, that's Parshas Yaal Behar, for all those, a shout out. Yeah, she asked me to record. Anyway, Pasuk says in Parshas Behar a couple of times that a Kodesh Baruch Hu calls Bnei Yisrael Avadim. Pasuk says, Kili Bnei Yisrael Avadim, Hashem is, calls Bnei Yisrael his servants, his slaves, whatever you want to call it. He says a couple of places, both contexts within the context of Eved Ivri. And the question is, right, you hear that phrase thrown around a lot, right, to be an Eved Hashem. Right, to be an Eved Hashem, we hear that phrase thrown out a lot. And the question is, what does that mean? What does that mean? I feel like we grew up thinking that was like some sort of negative connotation, right? We're slaves, right? This almighty being came, kind of gave us these laws, and like, you know, that's my phone, sorry. Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us these laws, and we don't have a choice, etc. But as we get a little bit older, we kind of realize that that's not exactly true. The Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Yod has machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Turnus Rufus. Turnus Rufus was one of the Roman generals at the time. And Turnus Rufus was a bit of a lamdan and knew a little bit of Torah. And he said the pasuk also calls Bnei Yisrael banim. The pasuk says banim atam Hashem alokechem. Pasuk in Dvarim. May have read it last week, next week. I don't remember exactly. And Turnus Rufus says, "What's the deal? Are you banim or are you avadim? Are you slaves or are you sons? Right? Obviously, a son is going to get better treatment or different treatment than a slave." So in his way of mind, Turnus Rufus is like, "Oh, I got you. When Bnei Yisrael are doing mitzvos, so then they're called banim. Then they're called sons. When they're not doing mitzvos, when they're sinning and doing whatever, so then they're called avadim." And Rabbi Akiva said back to him some sort of pasuk about tzedakah. Like, he basically didn't answer the question whatsoever. And the question is, what did Rabbi Akiva respond? Did he respond at all? So the Torah Tzmima writes that Rabbi Akiva didn't even have to respond to Turnus Rufus because the whole concept of banim being different or better than avadim is ridiculous. The concept of being an Eved Hashem is not a negative thing. Right? It's one of the greatest compliments you can get. We can be banim and avadim, right? Coexistently, right? I can coexist. We say in Yom Kippur, Yom Neroyim, davening, right? If we're sons, treat us like this. If we're slaves, treat us like that. But those are not necessarily, right, different, one better or worse. Right? Three people who called David Hashem in the Chumash. Anybody know? Trivia? Three.
Moshe.
Okay, I told you. Moshe, good.
Abraham.
Abraham and what?
Yoshua?
Close, no. But no cigar. Moshe, Abraham, and?
Yes, sir.
No? Who's close to Yeshua?
Kalev?
Kalev, correct. Yes, Moshe, Kalev, right? Very interesting. What in the world is the connection between those three? I have no idea. But Kalev, Avram, and Moshe are called Eved Hashem. That was like, you know, the greatest compliment in the world. So to be an Eved Hashem, right, is a tremendous compliment. Welcome. Who's that?
Oh, my God.
Sorry for starting late. If I thought anybody else was coming, I would have waited. No, I'm sorry. Hey, guys. Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow.
Oh, my
gosh. I would have totally waited. Hey, guys. All right, we'll pause the recording. Well, we'll continue in a minute. There you go. Go say hi. Get your hugs in. It's awesome. Okay, so we started by saying that that being called an Eved Hashem, we didn't say so much, just for those who walked in, we didn't say so much. We basically said that the concept of being an Eved Hashem, right, is a very very praiseworthy type of thing. I had a friend of mine. Has anybody ever heard of Omek HaDavar? The band, Jewish band? Okay, it's a long time ago. Anyway, so lead singer used to sit next to me in YU, in the Beis Medrash. And he was unfortunately passed away from leukemia. And when he was sick, he was sending around the emails, very inspiring emails. And he was always asking, "What's my avoda? What's my avoda in life? Right? What am I supposed to be working on at this time of my life?" Right? Obviously, he was going through a very difficult time. But that's the question that we all have to ask at any point in a Jew's life. We need to be able to answer the question, "What's my avoda? What am I working on right now?" Now, for boys, it's different. They should also be able to answer, you know, what they're learning right now. By the way, shidduch tip, if a guy can't answer what he's learning right now, he's not learning. Okay? But But for you guys, for sure, you should always be able to answer, what's my avoda? What are you working on? You work on it intensely, working on it a little bit more relaxed, more chilled, that's fine. But you should always be able to answer that question. And that question is always impacted by two things. Where you are in life, obviously you guys being a year or two out of SEM, okay, that's going to be a different answer in 10 years from now. And it's also impacted by what point of the year it is. The avoda of Adar is different than the avoda in Elul. So right now, we're in a kind of a weird place, because we're after Tisha B'Av, right after Tu B'Av, and before Elul, right, kind of in that like mid-space where we're kind of just not doing anything. The question becomes, what is our avoda right now? So I wanted to schmooze a little bit about that. What is our avoda right now? And as I mentioned, we'll try and stay away from the safe on the podcast and the whole deal, so that'll be a little bit different. The first thing I wanted to mention is an unbelievable vort in shul that I heard at this new rabbi by the Young Israel, his name is Daniel Rosenfeld. So he said an unbelievable vort over Shabbos. I didn't plan to start with this, but he said an unbelievable vort over Shabbos, and I really wanted to share it because it's so relevant for us. The pasuk says, right, Moshe is recapping what happened, right, in Parshas Ekev. Moshe is recapping Mavin Har Sinai and the aftermath, the golden calf. And he talks about how he broke the luchos. Right, that you're familiar, right? He goes through the whole story over there. Moshe broke the luchos. Kosh Baruch Hu says it's good that you broke the luchos. The first luchos, right, were ridiculous. Right, they're made out of sapphire, carved by God. Gemara Megillah says you could see through it on both sides, meaning you could read it on both sides. So much so that there are a couple letters in the Hebrew language that are entirely circular, right? The Mem, Sofit, and the Samech. So how do you have that chiseled into stone? So the Gemara says that the middle was floating in the middle of the Luchos, right? For a Samech or a Mem Sofit. They're ridiculous. The Gemara says that if we would have gotten the first Luchos, we never would have forgotten Torah, right? And then I would never have been able to reuse a shear ever. You guys remember everything. But anyways, the first Luchos were ridiculous. The second Luchos, obviously, much less so. Moshe wrote them with his own hand into regular stone. It wasn't miraculous, whatever, etc. So both, Moshe says this parsha that both of them, or he hints to anyway, that both of them were put in the Aron. Right, the Aron had a bunch of stuff, right? It had a man, had a Sefer Torah, had both the luchos, the regular luchos and what's called the shivrei luchos, the broken luchos. At first glance, everybody would argue, I myself as well, would argue that the first luchos were superior in every way. Right, the first luchos were way better than the second. The Ibn Ezra in Parshas Kisis, I didn't see it inside. I looked for it. I have to find it. But this is what he said. I believe him. He said that the second luchos were better. How in the world are the second luchos better? It's because the second luchos are what we have. The first luchos are broken. They're history. They're gone. They're not what we have. We don't have them anymore. Second luchos are what we have. And so therefore he says that they are therefore superior. And the Musar, he pointed out, and this is very relevant for an older community, but also so relevant for a younger community as well, is that don't look back and wish that things were different. Meaning we're going to get to Chodesh Elul, and we're going to look back, and we're going to try the tshuva, and right, try and improve, etc. But if you get caught looking back, right, and get a little bit weighed down by your past, but by what could have been, so that's not Yiddishkeit, right? That's not how we roll. Right, the avoda of right now is right now, and not wishing things were different. Right, you guys are all holding however many years out of SEM. I'm sure you could look back and wish you did this differently, did that differently. Wish you didn't do that. Wish you didn't hang out with that guy. Whatever. Just kidding. Wish I didn't. And certainly afterwards, right after SEM, right. We all have these after yeshiva. We all have these after these ideas of how things are supposed to go. And whether it's 3 months or a year and 3 months or 2 years and 3 months after SEM, so I would imagine, right, it's different than how you envisioned it. But the avoda of the luchos, of what Ibn Ezra is saying, is that you can't regret how things went until now. You can fix it, right? You can look back and work to improve on it, but it doesn't do anybody any good to live in your past, right? What the avoda is to work on who you are right now. Right, that's always the avoda, but certainly right now between Chodesh Av and Chodesh Elul, before we get to Elul, before we start doing tshuva and kind of like repairing, the avoda is to think about, right, I'm working on the human being that I am right now. It doesn't help, right, if things are different or you wish things were different. We have to start with what we are. That's the beginning of next week's parsha also. We'll keep it short because that's in the podcast and that's in the shir and that's in the sefer. But Pasuk says, Re'enochi, nosein lefnechem hayom, bracha uklala. Moshe says, check it out. I'm giving to you for you today a blessing and a curse. And he points out that the blessing is to keep the Torah and the curse is not to keep the Torah. It's a whole shmooze. But the Pasuk, in the first three psukim, it says the word hayom three times. Says in Siva Shalom, what's with the Hayom? Obviously, Moshe's standing here today. What does he mean? Moshe gave a whole speech today. So it's been a long day. And Moshe gave a whole long speech. So the emphasis is Hayom, that the bracha and klala that Moshe is giving is that you have to focus on right now. Right? The only thing you can do to make sure you get bracha, not klala, is to focus on the here and now. So that's the avodah. The avodah is number one, to pick your head up, right, to drop all the baggage that you're carrying with you, right, and realize that your analyzation on yourself, right, starts from right now. Starts from today. Second thing to keep in mind is something we mentioned in the last day of the year, but I want to mention it again because it's always relevant and it's always good to hear it. And it happens to be found in this last week parsha. Moshe compares Bnei Yisrael, right, to stars. Right, Pasuk says, "V'atas samcha Hashem al kacha kechokvei Hashemayim larov." Right, Moshe is saying, "Okay, we messed up, golden calf, etc., but don't worry, you are like the stars." And the comparison to stars is very useful, right? Stars are something we see, right, from our vantage point, very, very tiny, little, you know, things in the vast sphere of nothingness. But in reality, obviously enormous, tremendous balls of energy. Rabbi Shlomo Salanter uses that comparison, makes the comparison to sin, right, which is, Shmuzes, again, we'll have an Elul, right, that he says that we view sin, the way we view sin is the same way we view stars, right? We don't think sins are such a big deal. But in reality, they're enormous. Okay, that's a little bit depressing. I don't want to get to that. But this Bnei Yisrael are also compared to stars. What is the comparison between Bnei Yisrael and stars? So there are many interpretations, but one of them is that we view ourselves as minuscule and insignificant and tiny little specks of stars in a vast nothingness. And in reality, we are, all of us, each one of us, are tremendous balls of potential energy. And we have the ability to impact worlds, as Rav Chaim writes in Nefesh HaChaim, that our actions impact, right, the world through and through. Right? Chazal, we say at the end of davening every day, you guys don't say it, but we say at the end of davening that Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam, that Talmidei Chachamim keep, right, increase the peace in the world. It's not because they're going out to fighting in the Peace Corps. It's because they're sitting and learning Torah, and that has an actual effect, right, on things. So you can accomplish whatever you want. Right, you could, whatever you set your mind to, you can accomplish, quite literally, and that is something that is very, very important to keep in mind. I always quote like to tell a story about my brother in the marathon. You guys remember the story? I could skip it if you remember it. Neely's nodding your head. Broken leg. Yeah, pretty much sprained ankle. Right, just very quickly, sprained ankle. For those who don't know the story, my brother sprained his ankle before his first marathon. High ankle sprain. Walked into the to get his marathon shirt on crutches. And they were laughing at him. We're like, what are you doing here? He's like, yeah, I'm going to run tomorrow. And they're like, wait. So meanwhile, sure enough, he ran the full marathon on a highly sprained ankle. And I asked him how it felt. Did it hurt? And he said, every step. So if you want something, you might say you can do it. Right? It may hurt, but if you, no matter what you, whatever you want, right, that's you can accomplish, even if you think it's a big deal. Okay. As I said before, we're holding on a Monday, so therefore it gives me... Oh, did I say before? I don't remember. Maybe I didn't say before. We're holding on a Monday, and that means I have license to dip into last week's Parsha, and also next week's Parsha. So last week's Parsha has a couple of lines. We'll talk about one of them two of them. That if you take it face value, it's kind of like you skip over it, but when you think about it, it's actually extremely, extremely powerful for us. We talk about a lot of the Hasidic Rebbes like to take the actual literal meaning of a phrase and take it like out of the context of the pasuk, right, and apply messages to it. So the pasuk, not that I'm a Hasidic Rebbe, but I never saw this anywhere, and I like to take this pasuk and kind of like use it to reinforce what we've talked about. We talk about this a lot, but the pasuk says Vlo saviso iva al beisacha, vaisacha. Sorry, there's fart in there. Vlo tavi toiva el beitecha. Good. Okay, now you understand, right? Now, okay. Vayita cherem kamo. Okay, the pasuk says don't bring a toiva into your house, a toiva, and because you will be cherem, you will be, how do you translate cherem? Cherem is like excommunicated or whatever, kamohu, just like it. And, okay, Moshe's talking about avodah zarah, etc., without the context, but if you just take those words and think about it in our own lives, right, what is another, the avodahs that we're trying to work on? Again, the first avodah is to remember to start from today, to not to look back, not to regret, but to start working on yourself out as you are right now. Second avoda is to not bring in any to'eva into your house. Now, I like to, in Hilchos Shabbos, whenever I give the shiurim, I like to define terms. So we're not going to define terms right now, but you guys can define whatever that means. Beisacha, wherever you're living, at your house, whether that's your house, your apartment, your room, whatever, your phone, whatever that is, you can define Beitecha however you want. And to'eva, you can also define to'eva however you want. But the mussar is, the message is, do not bring anything that could be considered a to'eva, an abomination, something that's inappropriate, right, into your homes. I don't want to give any examples, but you guys can all think about something that you probably should not be bringing into your home, daladamos, ears, eyes, mind, whatever it is. I say all the time, we're very careful about what we put into our mouths, but we are not very careful what we put into our eyes and ears. Chafetz Chaim talks about anything that we listen to, right, enters into our ears, enters into our body, into our neshamas. Again, I'm not going to spend time on fancy sources for this one, right? You guys have heard this many, many times, but sometimes the simplest things pack the most punch. Don't bring anything into your home. Why? Because v'hayita chayrim kamohu, because you're going to be chayrim, you're going to be excommunicated, you're going to be like the thing you bring in, right? The things that we surround ourselves with, right? The things that we listen to, the things that we hear, right, end up impacting us to the point where we become like it. We start thinking about it. We start thinking like it. We start talking about it. Right? The things that we involve ourselves with, right, very often are the things that we become. And later in the parsha, Moshe says, right, also talking about telling Bnei Yisrael to do tshuva, he says, umaltem es orlas levavchem. That one of the things a person should do, they should kind of do a bris milah on the orla, on the skin around a person's heart. Obviously, a person doesn't have skin around his heart, but what Chazal talk about, and as you might imagine, is that a person sort of builds up this resistance to spirituality by the things that they do, and that creates like the imagery of a skin around a person's heart. So the goal is to kind of, before you even have to remove the stuff that's around your heart, right, you don't get it if you leave out, right, the to'evas, the impact, the abominations, the things that impact us, if you leave that out of your house so you don't end up having, right, the skin around your heart. So that's another avoda that for a person to work on, right, to make sure that, again, obviously we all have phones and laptops and internet, we're all using this stuff, but to make sure that we're kind of, you know, before you even have to peel off the skin around your heart, to kind of peel back maybe, and maybe hold back on the things that you're watching. Well, we all know the things that we can, you know, without examples, we know, everybody knows what that is. And you can think about at least one, you know, whether it's 5 minutes, an hour, a different show, et cetera, you guys can all, you're already beyond the seminar. You don't need to be told what to do. You guys can think about it on your own. Okay. The overall overarching avoda of the summer, in my opinion, now, I'm a little bit pessimistic, maybe a little bit more realistic, definitely more sarcastic. But I have a friend who likes to always say that you have two choices in life. You can either survive or you can thrive. My Rebbe also used to always say that you have a tremendous amount of things you can accomplish in the summer. I'm a little bit more pessimistic. I always thought that the avoda of the summer is to survive. The avoda of the summer is to get from point A to point B. Wherever you left, whether it's seminary, whether it's college, whatever learning program you're in, whatever structure you're in, I always felt that the avoda of the summer is just to get from one place to the next. Because especially at your age, it's just to get from one structured environment to the next, because everybody knows when there's no structure, when you're doing nothing, so that's when you have all the opportunity for all the to'evas to kind of creep in and all the things you should be watching, etc., right, kind of come to the forefront. And that's, you know, that's Elul, kind of like when we start Chodesh Elul, that's kind of like when the real avoda kicks in, right? When we start hearing the real shmuzes about doing tshuva. The Medrash says in Tetzave, beginning of Parshas Tetzave, right? Pasuk says, right, we have to make olive oil for the menorah. That's the first topic in the Parsha. And the Medrash quotes a Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Pasuk says, Zayit Ranan, Yafeh Pri Tor, Kara Hashem Shemecha. The Kodesh Baruch Hu called the Bnei Yisrael Zayit Ranan, right? A beautiful olive. Well, the Medrash continues and says, I'm just paraphrasing from the Hebrew, right, that why are Bnei Yisrael compared to an olive? Because of all the drinks in the world, right, when you mix them together with other drinks, right, it becomes one. It becomes homogenous to an extent. But olive oil always rises to the top. No matter what, you pour it in first, you pour it in last, right, whatever it is, olive oil always rises to the top. So Bnei Yisrael also, As the Medrash says, B'shasha osim ritzono shel makom, when Bnei Yisrael are doing what Hashem wants, they always rise to the top. Problem is, that's not what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk doesn't say olive oil. And the Pasuk says Zayit Ra'anan. It says an olive. Bnei Yisrael compared to olives. Anybody ever watch James Bond? Olives go to the... Okay, that's fine. I'm dating myself, apparently. Although I heard there are new movies, so I'm not dating myself that much. Whatever. He drinks a martini with olives. My olives. Everybody get an olive and a drink. Olive goes to the bottom. It doesn't go to the top. So that's Pashas is that's the simple shot in the Medrash. But Bnei Yisrael are saying what when Bnei Yisrael are doing Ritzon Shel Makom, when Bnei Yisrael are doing what Akash Baruch Hu wants, when we're doing okay, then we're compared to olive oil. When we're not, then we're compared to an olive. But the million-dollar question is, what is Ritzon Shel Makom? What do you mean? What does Hashem want? What did Akash Baruch Hu want from us? So as you may have noticed in this parsha, Moshe asked that question. He says, what does God want from you? And he said, just some years Shemayim. That's all he wants, right? Kiim liyiras Hashem alakacha. Akash Baruch Hu wants you. Fear is a bad translation. I hate that translation because it's like almost like something scary out of a horror movie. It's not. Akash Baruch Hu is not in a horror movie. He's not like it, like that clown. Am I afraid of clowns? No, yeah. Nobody else. Yeah, horrified. Anyway, and I never even saw it. But just horrified of clowns. Anyway, so Akash Baruch Hu is not in a horror movie, right? You're Shemayim. I always got the fear of heaven. I don't know. That doesn't really ring so real true for me. But I think. Fear is Yerushalayim is probably, you guys, what's up? Wow. It's a long drive. No way. Oh my gosh. Welcome. Welcome. Are there more chairs? Bringing up? I'm sorry. Wow, I didn't take out enough. I'm very, I apologize. No, well, I'm very honored. I'm not going to lie. I'm very honored. Okay. Let's. What is Yir Shamayim for us? Really, like practically. So Yir Shamayim, I would argue, Yir Shamayim for us is an awareness of Akash Baruch Hu. It's more like an awesomeness. You know, like we say things are awesome. That's not what I mean. Like full of awe. Like when things are awful, not awful, but awful. You know what I'm saying? So that's almost Yir Shamayim to me, because we have a very hard time of already connecting to Akash Baruch Hu. So before we can get to Yir Shamayim, the fear of Akash Baruch Hu, is everybody hot? Is it warm? Is it warm in here? I feel like it's more. No, you guys are comfortable?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Before we can get to Yir Shamayim, you have to actually come to respect and have a relationship with Akash Baruch Hu. So that's what we're talking about over here. How do we have an awareness and a relationship with Akash Baruch Hu so that when we get to Chodesh Elul, we can start with hit the ground running? Right, right now, we're in between. So Rav Chaim Shmuel Levis talks about this in Sichos Moser, and he says the things that detract from Yir Shamayim, the main thing that detracts from Yir Shamayim is Hesach Hadas. Anybody know what Hesach Hadas is? Hesach Hada'at. Hesach Hada'at, no? It's basically, for lack of a better term, it's spacing out. It's lack of staying on task. It's lack of a straight-on, continued involvement in something. Like I'm learning, and then I space out, check my phone. That's Hesach Hadas. That's kind of removing your mind from something. Right, we're all davening. Immediately, we have Hesach Hadas. As soon as we get to Shemot Esrei, all over the place. Yeah, I always, whenever I forget something, I always know that I'll remember it. Smack in the middle of Modim. Smack in the middle of Modim if I even get that far. Usually earlier, I'll remember something. So Hesach Hadas is kind of spacing out and not focusing on something. And that, says Rav Chaim, is a... It's something that detracts from a Yir Shamayim and our focus in relationship with Akash Baruch Hu. He brings a couple of sources. He brings a couple of sources to reinforce this, and then we'll give a tremendous mashal at the end. He says that the Gemara says in Megillah and Daf Vav that whenever you have two others, we have two others this year. This year is a leap year. I don't know if you know. So whenever you have two others, you have a question: what month you should do Purim in, first or second? Theoretically, Gemara entertains you should do other in the first. You should do Purim in the first other. Because Ein Marvin and all mitzvahs, you shouldn't skip over mitzvahs. The Gemara decides, though, no, we should do other, as you know, right? Purim in the second other. Why do we do that? So the Gemara says, because mismach geula legula adif. It's much better to have two geulas, two redemptions, excuse me, back to back, in months that are back to back. What is that? So Purim and Pesach. Purim and Pesach are back to back, connected by 30 days. Right? There's a halacha, 30 days before a holiday, you should start learning the halachas of a holiday. So that's already, many have the minhag on Purim. To learn some Hilchos Pesach, even though that sounds funny, because it's 30 days before Pesach. But that's the idea, that we want to connect to spiritual experiences, and the goal is to keep that going, right? When you end SEM, right, you have some sort of learning program to set up, right? Right now, I don't know whether you're successful or not, is regardless, right? We're working from today, that's where we started, but you should have some sort of learning programs, right? To get you into some sort of something every single day, to get you into Elul, and then getting you into the learning program that you're eventually going to go to school in. The Gemara in Erevin Daf Nundala, it says that Rabbi Preda taught his students something 400 things, 400 times, not 400 things. He taught someone something 400 times. He had what's called Hesach Hadas. He kind of like spaced out or whatever, something took care, and he had to learn it another 400 times. There's a Gemara in Ksubas Nadaf Samech Gimel. Sorry, my apologies. I had to check the sheet for those who are listening on this. Rabbi Kiva went away for 12, you guys know this, Rabbi Kiva went away for 12 years to learn, right? He came back, heard his wife saying, I wish he would go for another 12 years, Rabbi Kiva went right back to the Beis Medrash. Why didn't he stop in for a coffee? Because, says Rabbi Chaim, that 12 and 12 is not the same as 24 straight. And when you have continued spiritual experiences, right, if you have a break in the middle, so that's going to impact, right, the quality of the spiritual experience. So says Rabbi Chaim, right, the parable, the mashal that he gives, it's a famous mashal, but it's tremendous, tremendous for us. That if a person wants to boil water, right, wants to keep the flame of Torah, you know, I'm not going to get poetic, but if a person wants to boil water, yeah, so you can't just turn it off and on, right? It'll never boil. Like, you literally will never get there. Right? You have to keep the fire on. So that's what we're talking about over here. You have to keep the spiritual experiences going. I'm very honored that you guys, for example, decided to come out for a shir, etc. But the danger of the summer is, and maybe this is a very long roundabout way to say this, but the danger of the summer is taking off too much time, is having too much time between holy experiences and holy pursuits. So the question simply is, how do we get it back? Now, I'm not saying you guys took time off from spiritual pursuits, but I would imagine that there was some downtime, right, in the summer that caused you guys to have some sort of hesed chadas, right, to kind of maybe not think about it Kodesh Baruch Hu for a few minutes. So how do we get it back? So this is also something I mentioned at the end of the year, but also something that is tremendously, tremendously relevant. And the answer is that the devil is in the details. The little decisions that we make on the day-to-day, right? We're not going to start deciding to go off to Kollel and whatever, if there's such a thing. No, but we're not going to go start learning 12 hours a day. Right? The little decisions that we make, right, the little details that we skip in Yiddishkeit, right, are what helps us get back. Right? The Gemara we've quoted before, the Gemara in Shabbos, Naf Kofei, the Gemara is also a Nida, Daf Yigimel, that basically, I'll just quote it because it's powerful the way it's written. Rav Shem ben Elazar Omer, Mishem Chilfa Bar Igra, Hashem Mishem Yochan ben Nuri, Hamakari, those Amorayim say, Hamakari begadav bechamaso. If someone tears his clothes in anger, Hamashabar kelev bechamaso, or someone who breaks a kli, breaks a utensil in anger, Hamafazer meosav bechamaso, or someone who spreads out money, right, with in his anger. That's not like this. Yeah, someone who rips out money and throws it away. Yehi beinecha kavod avodah zarah. It should be as if you worshipped idols. How does that work? So the Gemara explains the famous line: Shekachi umenaso shel yitzar hara. This is how the yitzar hara works. Hayomu omor lo osekach. Right, today he tells you to do this. Machar omor lo osekach. Tomorrow he tells you to do that. Asher yomor lo oved avodah zarah v'holech v'oved. Until he says go do avodah zarah, and the guy goes and does avodah zarah. Meaning one thing leads to another. Right, the big averas that people violate, it's not just like that. Right, there's a buildup. There's always a process. Right, things don't happen overnight. Right, so if a person pays attention to the little things, to the little easy things, that's Ekev Asher Tishmun, that's the first Rashi, second Rashi, the things that we step on with our heel, the mitzvos that we step on with our heel, if you do those, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises endless reward. All the reward at the beginning of Parshas Ekev is if we do the little things. Right, and that's what will help us get back on or continue on the path. Right, and ironically, those decisions are often very much harder. Right, much harder to do. Right, a person would tell you if you want, you know, let's go on a, I don't know, go to Aruba for Shabbos or something. So you can imagine that's not going to be such a spiritual journey. But if a person says, let's just use our phone for 5 minutes on Shabbos, that's much harder. That's much harder. If a person says, let's go, move out to Vegas or whatever, and never keep Torah or mitzvahs ever again, you'd probably be like, not so down. But if you'd skip Robbie Herman's Shear to binge a show on Netflix, I don't know if that's what you did, but I apologize if you did. Anyway, if you would skip this Shear for whatever reason, or somebody else's Shear, so that's not a big deal. That's not a big deal. It's the little things. It's the little things that are what keep us going, right? Again, the small things in and of themselves are not such a big deal, but when you put them all together, right, that you're going to end up going down that road. And that's the way you do something is the way you do everything, as a friend of mine likes to say. So that's the advice that I have for you guys. What do we cover so far? We covered living in the here and now, right? Not regretting, right, past decisions or past actions, but right, working on the person that you are now. We talked about that everybody is a star. That you can think literally, quite literally, right? B'nai Israel are compared to stars, right? And we have tremendous energy. We have ability to change ourselves, to do whatever we want. We talked about what else? Remind me. Do I have to flip back? Because I don't remember. That's very bad. I was just here. What? We talked about Yerush Shemayim. We talked about not bringing toevas into the house. We talked about Yerush Shemayim. We talked about getting continued, right, not having Hesach Hadas between Yerush Shemayim, right, not having, not kind of losing track between keeping spiritual experiences together. And we talked about the devils and the details. Right? The devils and the details, right? That's how we go by there. I heard from Rav Aryeh Leibowitz that if a person wants to work on themselves, so you don't have to like start doing these big avodas. Right? The avodas should just be, right, if you want to work on, let's say, your taivas or your listening to your tzahara, said so just don't eat one thing a day. Not like dinner. Like a Milky Way or something. Or like my mom has yodels and like, love frozen yodels. Yeah. Yodel? Oh, Drake's case and stuff like that. No, you guys don't have that?
Well, yeah.
Ashkenazi food, don't worry about it. It's okay. I can show you. I can show you. It's like a cake. Whatever. Don't worry about it.
No, not
ring dings. Ring dings? No? Twinkie, sure. It's like a Twinkie like type stuff. Something like that. Anyway. Anyway, so he says, just to finish up, he says, if you want to work on your ability to resist the Yetzer Hara, so just don't eat something, a snack you want to eat every single day. You'll be fine, right? And your ability to resist, right, your willpower, right, will be built up. So that's A. And B, set aside a little bit of extra time to learn it. They asked Rav Salanter, right, a guy came to him and said, Rabbi, I got 5 minutes a day to learn. 5 minutes a day, what should I learn? You know what he told him? You should learn Musar. Because then you'll realize you have a lot more than 5 minutes a day to learn. When we're waiting for a bus, when we're driving, when we're whatever, when we're waiting for a shiur to start. No, I'm just kidding. Whenever believe me, you can get those less than a day type things. They have all these podcasts, all this type of stuff. You can learn 5 more minutes, maybe 10 more minutes a day. Right. So if I leave you guys with those are the two messages I would suggest. If you want to pick something very small to work on right now, so learn a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit more. Right, and hold off on that extra Reese's. Just one. The second one you can have, and the first one. And then that'll work on your midas as well. All right, guys, thank you so much for coming. It's really great to see you.
Thank you.
Please stick around.